instructions, of the encouragement to check the attitude from time to time is an important way to begin to reveal perspectives, views, filters, different words we might use about how our own conditioning affects how we meet experience. Often that those perspectives that are at times connected to very deep conditioning, old patterns and habits deep from childhood, from what we've been doing for our lives. Often those perspectives are not clearly seen. They are kind of just taken to be the way things are. Of course, this is the way somebody would relate to this. And so it's not clearly recognized that this is a relationship to experience and that it is conditioned. And that there are other possible relationships to experience. So checking the attitude. And we can do that at times with a question. I haven't spoken too much about using questions so far in this retreat. But this is a tool that Saito Tejaniya offers at times to check in as a way to investigate or explore, to ask a question. What is the attitude? What else is happening here? Another way to get towards what's going on behind the scenes. What's the relationship to experience? How am I in relationship to experience? Different ways to ask that question of ourselves. With the use of questions, the intention of using questions is not to try to think about or figure out an answer. The intention of using a question is to spark the curious part of the mind. And so for some of us, at least, when we, and the Sayadaw says, when we ask ourselves a question like that, the mind will naturally kind of try to look and understand. So it kind of orients the mind to observe experience in a way that might reveal or help us to see something new. But the point of asking the question is not for us to pick up the question and try to figure out the answer. So for some people, asking questions like that, using questions, just simply takes you into thinking about something. And if that's the way questions affect your mind, then I would say, don't use questions, because that's not what we're trying to do here. We're really just trying to open to what's here, what's available, and at times broadening that to be curious about what might be behind the scenes. So checking the attitude, checking that relationship to experience, how we are with experience, can reveal things that were not clearly seen. Sayadaw sometimes says that a wise attitude, an attitude of mind that we're essentially cultivating with the kind of practice that we're doing, is a wise attitude that is okay with whatever's happening while it's happening, is that whatever is happening is not problematic. Whatever is happening can be seen and understood. Now, that doesn't mean that we are simply, when I say it's not a problem, so something recognizing that what's arising is not a problem, that it's okay, that it can be allowed. That doesn't mean that we have to think it needs to continue. Essentially, what the wise attitude is recognizing, acknowledging that what is already here, what is here in this moment, what has come to be, is already here. It's happening. And so it's an opening to and a full acknowledgement of what's already here. Allowing, that allowing attitude, that it's kind of an honesty. You know, it's like, yes, this is what's happening right now. It's not denying anything. It's not pushing anything away. It's, this is what's happening right now. That kind of perspective then has some wisdom in terms of response. And so sometimes a response is, well, oh, what's happening? Actually, it's okay. It's not particularly a problem. There's nothing particularly that needs to happen. But there can be times when, you know, we might notice, for instance, pressure on a sciatic nerve or something, and notice the pain of that, and notice reactivity to that, but then also recognizing, oh, there's pain, there's reaction. And then out of the seeing of all of it, recognize continued pressure on the sciatic nerve will damage the body. So it's appropriate to move. That decision, that choice can come out of wisdom and compassion rather than out of reactivity. And so connecting to this allowing attitude, this wise attitude that is not reactive to what's happening, doesn't mean that we don't respond. So that's an important thing to know about this wise attitude. Sometimes when we hear the language of allowing, of cultivating a perspective in mindfulness of things are okay as they are, we pick up the idea of that means that we don't need to do anything, that it would be, you know, that it would be the right kind of mindfulness is one that doesn't feel like it has to move if it's in pain or something, you know, that so we pick up a belief there. We pick up a view. And so wise attitude, wise relationship to experience, will respond skillfully, will respond in the direction of alleviation of suffering, but not in the direction of reactivity to suffering. So that's an important distinction about what wise attitude is. So wise attitude, this attitude of the mind not having a problem with what has come to be, recognizing, honestly acknowledging that, that's, you know, the kind of mindfulness we are cultivating. And yet so much of our habits and patterns and conditioning of wanting things to be otherwise, of believing certain things should be a certain way, wanting to hold on to things, to get rid of things, those habits and patterns are so deeply conditioned that of course they're going to come up. So we can't just put ourselves into wise attitude. Sayadaw says we move in the direction of wise attitude. We get to wise attitude by getting to know unwise attitude really well, by understanding it, not by trying to get rid of it. Because trying to get rid of it is another form of aversion. So there's a way in which when we open to, oh, this is what's happening. This attitude of not liking what's happening is what's going on. It shifts the attention, it shifts the attitude from being behind the scenes, how we're relating, the actual, like, you know, being driven by that attitude, believing that attitude, believing the perspective that attitude carries, to recognizing the attitude. So it shifts from kind of how, you know, the way we're looking at, looking through that filter, to knowing that filter is there. There's a huge difference between those two. And we begin to recognize that shift, that difference. At first, when we recognize that shift, it may feel like there's more suffering that's happening when we're seeing a reactive attitude because we become more conscious of the struggle in it. But over time, we begin to recognize that that kind of seeing, there's a kind of famous saying from some teacher in the past somewhere that's so apocryphal now, I don't even know who said it. But that's the kind of suffering that leads to the end of suffering. The seeing of the suffering is a different way of being with experience. And it does create the conditions for our reactivity to lessen over time. And so huge difference between having those filters in the background, unaware of them, and knowing that they are happening. So this question or this checking of the attitude, and, you know, it can be, if the questions don't work for you, it can be more like almost like we'd use a gesture in our mind of like, maybe a sense of broadening or stepping back to check in a sense of anything else here without using the question. So that aspect of this practice to check the attitude is essentially about helping the mind, the awareness see things that have been hidden, allowing them to then come into awareness where they can be seen, where they can be recognized, where we can be with them and understand, learn about how they work. So I've said several times, I think, checking the attitude from time to time. In my own exploration of this practice, I found initially, as it came up kind of in a question yesterday, that I kind of got a little vigorous with checking the attitude. You know, it's like everything I noticed, and what's the attitude about that? And then I noticed, oh, well, that's something that I've noticed, so what's the attitude about that? And it just became very busy. And so I realized that for myself, and I think for a lot of people, a little bit more sparing in checking the attitude. There are some good times to check the attitude that I found in my own practice. One, if it feels like there's a struggle, if it feels like that the practice is hard in some way, there's some kind of attitude going on in the mind that is not clearly seen. So if it feels like there's a struggle, be curious about, I mean, like, what's the struggle connected with? What's the relationship? What's the attitude? Or maybe what else is happening? You know, what else is going on? Because sometimes a struggle in practice is not so much about an attitude about what's happening right in front of us, but it's because the mind is kind of like trying to attend to something else that's going on that we haven't really noticed. A niggling, you know, itch in our body somewhere that we're not really clearly aware of, that's kind of disturbing the mind because we're, you know, attending to something else. So sometimes it's just like broadening. Well, what else is going on here can reveal other sensations, other experiences that the mind is kind of playing with or niggling with that we hadn't noticed it was niggling with. So that, you know, opening, broadening, what else is going on here? So when there's a struggle in the practice, that's a good time to check the attitude. Another good time to check the attitude is after the mind has returned from wandering, after you have, you know, notice that awareness has returned, you know, kind of like that, oh, back, awareness is back, and what's here in this moment? It can be useful to check, and what's the relationship to what's here? Because sometimes as the mind wanders off, it will, you know, it, as I said, it'll wander into thought, it'll wander into a new terrain. It's like a new landscape that we've wandered into. And we often have relationships to different landscapes. And so, you know, a relationship to the landscape that's been created has happened. And when we return from the mind wandering, there are resonant lingerings of that landscape and the attitudes connected with that landscape, that if we are just trying to think about, well, what's happening now, and looking into, you know, what we think about what's happening, we might miss that lingering resonance of the landscape that had been constructed and the attitude stored. And those attitudes can then affect how we're relating to experience. So when we return from wandering, when we return from wandering, notice what's happening here and now that's connected to, what's the effect of the wandering? What's the effect of that wandering? And what's the relationship to that effect of the mind having been wandering? Also, a very common attitude immediately upon returning from wandering is a judgment. It's a judgment that, oh, yeah, shouldn't have been wandering. And that's, you know, that's just, okay, well, there's the attitude. Yeah, the mind thinks it shouldn't have been wandering, you know. That's a belief. That's, you know, it's just an idea that the mind thinks it shouldn't have been wandering, and then we're creating this problem around it. I mean, the mind did wander. That happened. So that was what happened. And then upon return, we create this idea, and the mind believes it shouldn't have been doing that. And so there's a conflict. There's a conflict in the mind. So just noticing that judgment. Oh, judgment. Judgment is what's happening right now. And can it be, you know, oh, well, that's, it's like, of course that judgment is happening. I practiced that judgment so many times. It's happened so many times in the past. Of course, it just goes there. It's like, that's the natural condition. So can there be, again, not trying to repress or squash that judging, just like, oh, that's what's happening. And see what happens if you notice the judgment, as opposed to, we often then will react to the judgment. So when the mind returns from wandering, so if there's struggle, it's a good time to check the attitude. When the mind returns from wandering, that's a good time to check the attitude. A third good time to check the attitude is if it feels like it's going really well. If it feels like there's a stability of the mind, if it feels like there's some clarity in the mind. So the opposite of struggle, essentially, you know, if it feels like things are smooth. A couple of good reasons to check the attitude there. One, I've seen at times, you know, kind of surprised at one point practicing at Shui U Min with Sayadaw Utejin Nia, I was at a place in the practice where the mindfulness had gotten pretty continuous. There was quite a bit of stability, quite a bit of ease in the mind. And at some point in that process, it occurred to me, well, what's the relationship to this? You know, what's the relationship to this, the practice going well? What's the relationship to this experience? And I noticed there was a subtle, like, clinging, trying to make that experience continue. As soon as that was noticed, there was a letting go of the trying, but then there was a fear that it wouldn't continue. And so, that was noticed. And then what happened was the mind got really amazed that these subtle kinds of, it was very subtle, these kinds of subtle greed holding to the practice, that I hadn't seen it in that very stable place. So there was a lot of appreciation that arose. It's like, wow, that's so amazing. So just a flux, you know, a flow of different attitudes that came. Sometimes some very subtle clinging can be revealed in those places of really clear practice. And in some ways, even more important, I think, is when it's going well like that, we kind of sometimes take it for granted, or we get complacent, or we kind of ride that, and it's like, oh yeah, that feels really good. But we're not really noticing the qualities of mind that are supporting that. We're not noticing the calm. We're not noticing the stability, the curiosity, the interest, the connection, the love, the patience. We're not noticing that. Just like we're taking it for granted. And those qualities are supported by mindfulness. And so that's kind of like allowing the mind, when it's going well, checking in, what's the relationship here? How is the mind here? Begins to open the mind to those qualities, to those beautiful qualities, and strengthens them. That amazing capacity mindfulness has to, when we are aware of the wholesome, it strengthens it, makes it more likely to continue in the future. Because the system understands that way lies well-being. The system understands that's worth cultivating. The system wants to move in the direction of well-being. When it understands what well-being is, it naturally wants to move in that direction. When the mindfulness sees reactivity, when it sees greed and aversion and confusion, it feels the tightness of that. It feels the suffering of that. It's not a mistake when we feel the suffering of reactivity, because that is how the mind learns. And it's the mind understands in seeing that is not the way to well-being. And so the system begins to understand that it's not helpful. Now, there's a deep conditioning that we have believed those reactive patterns to be helpful for a long time. We have believed aversion is helping us to get rid of things that we don't want, and that we wouldn't get along for very long without aversion. Aversion doesn't understand. Aversion has the view, you know, I need to get rid of this thing in order to make me happy, and I'm the way that will happen. You know, so there's that kind of view in aversion. And the aversion doesn't understand that there are other possibilities in the mind. First, the absence of aversion, you know, that just the release from wanting things to be otherwise has its own benefits. And then that there are other movements of mind, like compassion, that will act to alleviate suffering. It will act to move in the direction of well-being. And so the awareness of the mindfulness of the suffering that's connected with reactivity, that creates the conditions for our mind to understand that's not the way to well-being. And our mind begins to release and orient away from that. So being with things that the reactive qualities of mind, it's counterintuitive. When I first heard, you know, well, when you're angry, just notice that you're angry, I thought, well, won't that make me more angry? But this kind of awareness, curiosity about reactivity, has the opposite effect. It creates conditions for the mind to let go of the anger, to experience less of that reactivity in the future. So one more piece about attitude. In inclining or moving in the direction of wise attitude, primarily I've talked about getting to know unwise attitude really well. And yet there are also some supports that might create some conditions that will help support wise attitude. And that's, kind of reminders, Dharma reminders can help us. So as we see, for instance, as we see something, a struggle, as we see a reactivity, see frustration or see a resistance or see a holding on to something in our minds that we've seen that, then the question or the possibility, the question could come up, or perhaps we can consciously check in the question, can this be allowed? Because that allowing of the reactivity creates the container of wise attitude in which the reactivity is seen. So can this be allowed? Perhaps if you have a connection to self-compassion, that might, just holding yourself with compassion, that can support wise attitude there. There's also some wisdom reminders. This is a way in which we might use thought skillfully in our practice. And again, this is very dependent on the person, whether this is useful or not. But it is useful for a number of people, and so I will offer it as a possible tool. Try it on and see what happens for you. So this is bringing in a Dharma perspective, essentially. Consciously bringing in a Dharma perspective, using language in your mind around what's happening. The Buddha actually suggests this. These are reflections the Buddha offers us in the suttas. He said we should reflect. This is impermanent. Remember that consciously. And in the suttas, sometimes it even puts quotes around it. This is impermanent, as if it is reflecting or pointing to the mind thinking that thought. So, with what's going on, with whatever is happening, we might remind ourselves this is impermanent. That can help the mind then be able to hold it, because often a view in the back of the mind is, a view that's being held that's not quite seen is a view that this is going to last for a long time, or this is going to keep going forever. And so just bringing in that Dharma perspective, this is impermanent, can help the mind to orient towards being able to allow what's there. So this is impermanent. That's a reflection we can bring in. One of my favorite reflections, it's related to conditionality. So, we could reflect, well, this is conditioned. This is a result of history or something like that. But for me, the way that's expressed itself in language is the phrase, of course this is happening. The connection with the history of my being and what happened and how this being responded and what it experienced. This is what's unfolding. Of course, this is what's happening. It's not saying it should or shouldn't be happening. It's just acknowledging this is what's happening. And it's like, this is the kind of natural, the nature of what's has been conditioned to appear now. So of course, I said that so many times for myself around anger and self-hatred. Of course, this is happening. Look at how much I've practiced this in the past. It's like a habit. Of course, this is happening. And so, again, that of course created then conditions, not for the mind to get kind of pulled into it and feel like depressed or. So it's kind of like the of course could have the flavor of it's hopeless, but it didn't have that flavor, you know. So the of course can have the flavor of opening the mind to be able to hold it. Another phrase that Sayadaw offers that also resonates for me quite well, that's related to the conditionality of experiences. This is nature. This is what has, but this is what's growing right now. You know, nature, if we think about nature in terms of, you know, the way a plant grows, a seed gets planted, there's water, there's conditions that support that. It grows, if it gets light, it gets sun. So it's like that tree grows, that bush grows, that plant grows, given those conditions. And very similarly, what's happening right now is happening because of the conditions from the past, and there's the conditions have allowed the flowering of that thing to be in that moment. So it's a variation on, of course. This is nature. That also was very powerful for me. I was exploring at one point a depressed mind state, a mood that carried over many weeks, and that reminder, oh, this is nature, helped the mind to be able to hold it. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, this is what's unfolding right now. This is nature. So that conditionality, a deep teaching from the Buddha around the nature of our experience. And a third reflection, this is dukkha. Dukkha, the term often translated as suffering in from the Pali. Dukkha has a broader meaning than suffering. It means everything from the subtlest unease or offness to the deepest kind of pain and stress. And so it's a range. A dukkha covers a range of experience. And sometimes that can be just the right medicine to remember or recognize this is dukkha. And partly because, for me at least, the connection with that reflection, when it's powerful in my practice, is when I remember this is what the Buddha encouraged us to understand. The First Noble Truth, dukkha arises, dukkha happens, and dukkha should be understood. And so to remember at one point at Shui U Min, I was realizing, wow, there's just, it's so much suffering. It's like, it feels endless, this suffering. And then I remembered, oh, right, this is dukkha. This is what the Buddha told us we're supposed to look at. And there was like delight and joy of like, oh, right, I'm in the field of what the Buddha taught. So this is great. Yes, it's suffering. But the Buddha has tools to help us with this, so understand it. So sometimes that recollection around this is dukkha, at least to me, helps me remember this is the terrain of the Dharma, understanding dukkha. So it puts me into a Dharma field to have that reflection. So I want to shift to questions, and one question, I'll start with one question that came in the form, and it feels a little connected to the conversation on attitude, so we'll start here. So the question is, practicing open awareness when I'm at work. There are many people, noise, a lot of things to do. It can be overwhelming. It can become overwhelming. I can be aware of being overwhelmed and the aversion it creates. But apart from practicing self-compassion, what else would you suggest? So first of all, there's different ways in which that overwhelm might be happening. So I'm curious about that, and I'll just at this point just mention some different ways that occurred to me that that overwhelm could be happening. It could be that the overwhelm is about the experience. It's about all the things you have to do at work. It's about so many people. I've been secluded for months and now I'm actually at work and I feel overwhelmed by having so much contact or something like that. So it could be that. It could be the feeling of overwhelm is coming from the situation, the external situation, and your relationship to that external situation. So in that kind of a situation, I think it's useful to just recognize the overwhelm, recognize, wow, this is a lot. And the compassion, I think the compassion is a good tool there, Using some of these wisdom reflections might be helpful, like this is dukkha, some of those just reminders, putting yourself in the Dharma field. And another piece is to not try to be too, when there's a lot going on like that, not to try to be too like on top of things with the mindfulness. Just a really broad sense of being with kind of like, wow, it's chaotic. It feels chaotic. That's what's happening. So that the attention is not like trying to take in all the detail. And it also can be useful in a situation like that if the response is about the external situation. Skillful response might be to give yourself a break. I mean, go to the restroom and take a long break in there where it's quiet. You can close yourself in and not be surrounded by people. Take a break. Give yourself some space from all of the noise, all of the activity. Let your mind kind of settle in that way there, and then take a breath and go back into it. And I think at this particular time, many of us coming out of more seclusion into more interaction, it's like we need to titrate. So that can be a skillful response. Give yourself a break. So that's one side of the possibility of what might be happening. Another side is connected to what I actually mentioned a moment ago, is like it might be connected to the mind trying to track or be mindful of so many things. It's like open awareness, there's so much going on, and like, wow, how do I track all of these things? So the aversion is not necessarily about what's happening, but more about how to be mindful of it. That could also be where the overwhelm is coming from. The mind trying to, just keep up with the rapidity that things are changing with. And so there I would definitely encourage a much more stepped back approach. We kind of in some ways we with mindfulness we think we need to do the tracking to kind of like make notes or keep track of like I know everything that's happening. And when so much is happening, it can be much broader, just like a lot happening, that's what's happening. We don't have to know all the detail. So the idea that we have to know all the detail can be where the overwhelm comes from. So if we can approach mindfulness in daily life where there's a lot going on with much less precision, it can support and help not having that overwhelm. So that's another piece to explore. And then there are times where we get overwhelmed by just seeing, essentially, and this came up a little bit yesterday in a question, seeing just how much the mind is doing. It's kind of like at some point the mind opens, and this can happen in daily life. It happens more often at times in silence and in sitting, where we the kind of the continuity gets strong, and we kind of see that happened, and that happened, and that happened, and that happened, and we're not trying to see it, but we're just seeing how much is going on in there. that there's, you know, a sight and the feeling of that experience, and then the recognizing, and then all the ideas and views that come with that, and then that's applied to the next thing. We see all of that happening sometimes, even if we're not trying to track it. It's like we get this little window into the machinery of our minds, and it is mind-blowing and stunning and can sometimes be overwhelming. So sometimes it's not that we're trying to track that the overwhelm happens, but just that we're seeing stuff that is so new and so, and it's like our minds don't quite know how to fit in the information. And so that overwhelm, I would really encourage at that point, it's like there's a couple pieces. One, just notice the overwhelm. It's like that's the relationship to seeing all of that. So don't try to keep seeing all of it. But sometimes we just have to do the best we can in those kind of situations where the mind is just open to seeing something, and it's so new and so mind-blowing that our mind is reeling. And just knowing that reeling is happening, and we just do the best we can. Can that be allowed? This is impermanent. This is nature. So to just understand, sometimes in the course of our practice, our minds open to understandings that are unsettling, and there will be re relationships to that. And so noticing the relationships to those truths, to that understanding, helps the mind to come into balance around those understandings. So sometimes we just have to do the best we can with those